You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome, friends. This is episode number 476 of the Well-Fed Women podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Stephanie Ruper. Today, we're going to be talking about plastics in food and what's been going on with all of that. We're going to be talking about protein intake. So when to space, how to space your protein intake. Does it matter? And we're also going to be taking a little bit of, we're going to be chatting a bit about the metabolic eating trend and our thoughts. What do you do when you're under a lot of stress and can't sleep? Are there supplements for that? And maybe a little bit of how to manage stress when you cannot avoid it, which we're well-versed in that. So, hi, Stephanie.
Hey.
Welcome. Are you wearing green too?
Yeah, I would call this a teal. It's a shaded green teal.
So I have become a very big fan of two things from Abercrombie, which I never thought I'd say in my life, but they have amazing jeans. They have a really great pair. I think it's their high-rise mom jeans. I do love the fit. They also have a cotton seamless fabric bodysuit. This is actually that. And they just came out with a color in deep teal.
Now, I do have Abercrombie. Actually, I don't like wearing bodysuits because the whole snap at your lady bits thing is not.
I just snap it.
Oh, it's a.
Well,
so it's a step in.
I just tuck it. Like.
Oh, you just tuck. Yeah, wow. I don't know. I have an Abercrombie brand bodysuit tank top that's teal already. So.
It's really good on it. I'll link to it in the show notes, but okay, have these. I have at least three or four of these. And this was the latest spring color that came out. And I was like, I need that. So I'm glad that I got it. I'm glad you approve. But I never thought I would be buying bodysuits from Abercrombie. But here we are, 38 and buying bodysuits. Hey, did I tell you I turned 38?
Oh, man, friends. So, you know, listeners.
No, I'm not trying to shade you. I didn't
listen. Some people in the world, it's very important to remember their birthday. And Noelle is one of them. And this is the first time I've forgotten. I'm so sorry. My life was very hard for the last 3 months. And last week was very difficult for me. And I'm sorry. Why isn't it in my calendar?
I don't know. But I thought you actually text me happy birthday. It was only a few days ago. So you're not that late.
Oh, I feel terrible.
I really thought you had texted me and said happy birthday. So I am 38.
Also, Noelle's love language is gifts.
But you know what, though, Stephanie?
I didn't get you a gift. I'm so sorry.
You know what, Stephanie?
You know what, Noelle?
I don't think it's gifts anymore because I just don't care. I don't.
Very interesting.
Isn't that interesting? And I think that it's just come as being an adult. Like as you become an adult and you grow up and you are now the mom and the dad, I love giving my kids gifts. You should text me happy birthday. And I got all the balloons. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's definitely a way I express love to my kids, but I am not into other, like even my kids' friends and stuff. Like I guess I do get my friends gifts occasionally. Like I do love expressing that love in that way, but it's not necessarily a way that I receive love anymore. Like I'm kind of over it. I'm over the stress that gift giving can cause when you're adults trying to give other gifts to adults, you know, like I'm like, can we just not do that for birthdays and holidays? But if you're my husband, this does not include you. You need to give me plenty of gifts. Not that he listens to the podcast, but yeah, no biggie. I would rather just you keep doing the podcast with me. That is the best gift you could give me. So
every once in a while, Noelle's like, I would just like for you to keep doing the podcast with me. I'm like, no problem.
Yes, I can do that. So we did get the stomach bug and it was very overwhelming. My one kid got it first. We thought we had gotten through it. Then
the other kid and my husband came down with it. And I was like taking care of everybody. I did not get it, but luckily that all cleared up just in time for my birthday. And then we went to, I mentioned this before, but we did go to a little cabin in the Shenandoah in Virginia, which is just so beautiful. And it was awesome. So that was like my little trip. And then we came home and I had to record with Stephanie. So I was like, hey, can you record on my spring break for me? So
yeah,
she agreed. So here we are. Let's talk about plastics. Let's talk about it. Consumer Reports. This wasn't too long ago. This was actually last month, but more and more has been coming out about this. And I've definitely seen people talk about this more as a thing. And one thing that I really appreciate is that more doctors are talking about it, more MDs in particular, even conventional ones are talking about problems with plastics, with phthalates in skincare products and why that's a problem for women, especially women in their fertility. And I think that that's really, really important. But here we're talking about really it being found in your food. So Consumer Reports did a whole test and they found substantially high rates of plasticizers, specifically phthalates, in almost every single food that they tested. Let me bring up the amounts. I'll get to that in a second, because again, it's all within FDA limits. But they looked at total phthalates per serving in nanograms. The top food that had the highest amount of phthalates was Annie's Organic Cheesy Ravioli. A lot of you know Annie's brand, and it's an organic food, but it had 53,000 total phthalates in nanograms per serving. It was the highest by far. There is also some other really commonly found foods that, like Del Monte sliced peaches, were very high. Now it had 24,000 total phthalates per serving. So that's half of Annie's homegrown ravioli, but also General Mills Cheerios was high on the list. Wendy's crispy chicken nuggets, Chipotle chicken burritos wrapped in aluminum foil were very high. Moe's Southwest Grilled Chicken Burrito wrapped in aluminum foil was very high as well. We have Fairlife, these high protein milkshakes, which you've seen a lot of people drinking, that come in plastic bottles, were very high in phthalates. So we are seeing this general awareness now of the idea. I think a lot of people thought this was like pseudoscience for a while, that if you put food in plastic, or you eat food that has been wrapped in plastic, you are going to eat plastic. You know, it's going to transfer to the food. And there has been very little regulation on this. The federal government banned 8 phthalates in children's toys, but with the exception of the 2012 ban on BPA in baby bottles, there has been no substantive limits on plastic-related chemicals in food packaging or production. So, of course, all these companies yet again are saying we're within the limits, we're within the FDA regulations, but there is little to no regulation. That is what is true of the skincare, you know, industry as well. We think, oh, because something is on the shelf, it's going to be safe. And there is clear literature now that phthalates are endocrine disruptors and they are highly problematic. And so after reading a little bit of this, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, for me, I also like it's hard to wrap your head around something that might be in your food and might be affecting you that isn't really quantified and you don't see the results. Like, it's really hard to believe it. I was often just like, you know, it's fine. But I have actually recently been doing a lot of research about foods, and it's really funny. We talk about processing and the general thing we have often said, and people continue to say, and I continue to say, is like, avoid processed foods. Processed foods are bad. And the question is, why? Why? Why are processed foods bad? And I used to always look at the ingredient list and I'd be like, okay. And some have better ingredients than others. And like, cool. Like, I eat them. There's this one keto cereal I just like love. I eat a lot of it. But processing, like, we don't even think about this, but most foods have to be heated to be processed. in some way or another, like they're like granola, for example, right? Like all this kind of stuff, heated, canned meats, heated, and heating foods at high temperatures for a long period of time creates like it's chemical reactions that actually make these ages that we talk about, capital A G E S, that contribute to tissue damage and are like, right. And so like that doesn't show up on an ingredient label, the heating, right?
Yeah.
And,
right. How,
and something might like come in a plastic doohickey, plastic bottle, plastic, like whatever. And that's going to put plastic in your food, but also like, how was it stored while it was being made? And what was it cooked in? And what was it shipped in? And what was the cooking method? None of that shows up on an ingredient label. And that's another one. All of this stuff is so amorphous. We have no understanding of it, right? There's very little documentation of how these things kind of affect us. While we're looking at things like phthalates, like advanced glycation end products, like the effects of cooking processes, so much of what I've looked into in terms of human health in the last few months, the biggest lesson I've taken away from it is we know nothing. We know very little.
Right.
Yeah. We know very little. And so the idea, like, don't eat processed, there's this huge amount of stuff we barely understand that's happening in our food. And really the only way to avoid it is not eat processed, but then you're still eating food that's been farmed, that's been shipped. There's been pesticides. Hasn't there been, has it been genetically modified? Has it not? Like, we just got to do our best here.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
It's a jungle out there and nothing is perfect. And so I, like I said, like there's this keto cereal I really like, I eat yogurt. It comes in plastic containers. Like there's no such thing as a perfect diet. And, you know, we do our best to support our bodies so that they can process this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then also we want to avoid it as much as we can, but it's really hard to do it, you know, and there's this huge mystery box of understanding of how foods get modified and how that affects us. You know, generally yeah. speaking, if it comes in a bag or a box, like it's been through something and okay. Like just know, like, okay, like I'm going to eat something. It's been through something. It's probably fine. Maybe it's not, you know, maybe I'm going to die tomorrow. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be alarmist. You, what are your thoughts?
I think it's interesting that more conventional, there's more awareness being brought around it. And I think that's really a good thing because, and unfortunately, it seems like things like this build and build and build until it's completely infiltrated our society. And then we almost are like, oh, by the way, that wasn't the greatest choice. And so now we're left going, well, what do we do now? Because literally, if you want to go to the grocery store and buy foods, most of the stuff is in plastic. So yes, it's stuff that probably most people listening have been aware of and know. And I think we just need to be keenly aware of it and make better decisions, especially when it comes to our kids, because lots of kids' foods are in plastic packaging. And so how can we be really intentional with reducing their exposure overall? What I found was interesting from Consumer Reports is they're kind of taking a hard stance. And these are their scientists. And they're saying many of these thresholds do not reflect the most current scientific knowledge and may not protect against all the potential health effects. He also said, we don't feel comfortable saying these levels are okay. They're not. So they're coming out and saying the FDA and the regulatory commissions that are regulating food and food packaging are not based on science and they're dropping the ball. So we can, of course, get into why is that and the corruption that is involved and how regulatory commissions don't really regulate. They just get paid.
Noel used your quotes, by the way, when she said regulatory regulatory commission.
They're getting paid to make big businesses' lives easier. Okay. Yeah. It's all about money. And so I think that, okay, what do we do from here? So that's my concern is, okay, so what do you do? Yes, here's the thing. On this list, there was like Trader Joe's. Now it only had like 5,000, you know, in comparison to the 50,000 parts per serving that were in the ravioli, but like Trader Joe's meat product, you know, the meat that I get from Polyface Farm, they have to package it in plastic. And so you hope that there's not phthalates in it, but there could be, you know, it's something I need to ask my farmers about, of course. So how do we reduce our food being in plastic? One thing that I think is the biggest thing that you can do is of course, don't drink plastic water from plastic water bottles ever. Don't store your food in plastic. Do not cook with plastic utensils. Don't use plastic cutting boards. You are literally putting plastic pieces in your food with that. So number one, that's easy. Number two, when you shop at the grocery store and you're buying produce, don't use the plastic baggies that they give you. Just take it with you. Take it home whole or put it in a canvas bag. You know, everybody is being required to use these more canvas shopping bags now. Just put it in there and you get home and you wash your food. Another thing we can do is reject receipts. So ask for digital receipts because receipts do have BPA and plasticizers on them. And, you know, use glass when you can. Try to use glass for storage, but also there are options for, so for example, ketchup. My son likes ketchup. I'm not a ketchup person, but there are two options at the grocery store. There is one in a plastic bottle and there is one in a glass bottle. I'm going to choose the one in the glass bottle. So try to use glass bottles as much as possible, especially for condiments that are liquid that are going to be really touching the plastic the whole time they're being stored. So mayonnaise and ketchup and all that kind of stuff, I think is really important to try to go for. I'm just realizing all my spices are in plastic containers. You know, you just like I'm having my cabinets flash through my face right now. But look, you do the best you can. And we do use like mason jars and stuff to store nuts and popcorn kernels and that kind of stuff so that we're not, you know, buying more plastic and putting it in plastic. Of course, ditch plastic wrap, please. Interesting. One of the things that I saw was replacing your kitchen sponge. So a lot of the kitchen sponges have microplastics in them. They recommend coconut fiber sponges. So I was looking at that, which is really cool. And then they said, of course, cook more. Convenience foods are always in plastic. So the more we can cook, the more we can reduce our exposure. And of course, I would say make sure that you're not cooking in Teflon. That's gonna be a huge thing as well. So it is hard because processing is equals contamination. Storage equals contamination. So make sure that you are, the main things in your home are not plastic. That's what I'll say.
That's good.
I have tried almost every probiotic on the market over the last decade, and I have found one that has made a massive difference in my digestive health. And I think I know why. As someone who has really struggled with digestive issues since I was a kid, I notice a huge difference when I'm taking a quality probiotic versus when I'm not. I have been searching for a probiotic that takes a combination of evidence-based strains, including both lactobacilli and bifidobacteria strains. And I also wanted one that was proven to make it through stomach acid and into the digestive tract. And I have found that in Doctor's Choice probiotic from MD Logic Health. Ever since I started taking it about a year ago now, I have not had any digestive issues. I'm talking no cramping, no bloating, no IBS, even when I eat out or eat gluten-free treats. And here's why. Doctor's Choice is formulated with 30 billion live beneficial bacteria per capsule. It has a mixture of 10 lactobacilli and bifidobacteria strains. Research actually shows that when these are taken together, it's anti-inflammatory. It actually helps your digestive tract. It also contains FOS, which is a powerful prebiotic. Doctor's Choice is made by MD Logic Health. It's manufactured in a USA GMP FDA registered facility. It's tested for potency, and it has a special delayed release technology to ensure that it actually makes it into your digestive tract, which I feel like has made a huge difference for me. If you struggle with chronic digestive issues, leaky gut, feel like you get sick all the time, or just want to optimize your body's ability to break down food, including protein, I highly recommend it. Go to mdlogichealth.com/doctorschoice and use coupon code WFProbiotic for 10% off. Again, that's mdlogichealth.com/DRSCHOICE and use coupon code WFProbiotic for 10% off. Okay. Do you want to jump into questions?
I do.
Since you have a plumber coming, by the way, I told her I'd keep the chitty chat as little as possible. Question number one is from Emily. She says, hi, I have a question about protein intake. Do you know if it matters when you consume the bulk of your protein, especially as it relates to when you work out? When you consume the bulk of your protein? Yes. Especially as it relates to when you work out. Is spreading it throughout the day fine, or should we be trying to get a lot of it in close to when we work out? Thank you for all you do. I learned so much from you.
Great question. So immediately after you work out, your body is like, ah, I just exercised. But that, like, I think of it as sort of a, it's not an immediate, like, up and down. It's a very slow burn for, like, it comes down. The immediate is like, ah, I just exercised. I need to rebuild this muscle tissue. And then it happens for the next 24 to 48 hours. And so for me, I do always, well, all my meals have protein in them. So, but it's important to me that, like, I start my day with eggs, usually, if I can. And so I like to make sure that I do that in a reasonable window after my workout. But then I keep it consistent throughout the day because the whole process of building muscles is ongoing. And if you happen to work out on, like, a somewhat regular basis, then your body is constantly rebuilding muscle. In fact, it always is. But the more you exercise, the more it's doing this. So I'm going to go ahead and let my answer be super simple. I know that Noelle's got some facts, some science facts for you. But I like a nice, consistent protein intake, like a third of my protein in each of my meals, if I'm going to have a day that's organized in that fashion.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm not going to get on that, my rant, but we definitely know that protein early in the morning is huge for blood sugar, for cortisol levels, all that kind of stuff. So 30 plus grams of protein for breakfast can change your life. It will. I would say that what I've seen in the literature and what a lot of people are saying is even distribution. So try to make it as evenly distributed as possible. There is some research that supports this. So this is specifically in aging populations, however. So they found that an uneven distribution of protein, so too low at some meals, higher than necessary at others, is associated with fragility, slower walking speed, and fatigue. Is that not nuts? Data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey suggests that older adults who consume two or more meals with 30 to 45 grams of protein in each were stronger and had more muscle mass compared with those who consumed one or no meals with at least 30 grams of protein. The failure of many studies to look at protein distribution, not just total protein intake, may account for some inconsistent findings among studies that look at total protein intake and fragility or sarcopenia. So it seems like as you age, this getting 30 to 45 grams at each meal spaced evenly is really, really important for aging and keep maintaining your muscle and bone health, maintaining your independence, maintaining lower inflammatory markers. When it comes to limits, I think this is an interesting controversy. There's been a lot of assumption made, and I'll keep it to myself who I think it's come from, but there isn't any study to back it up. But a lot of people will say that you can't absorb more than 20 to 25 grams of protein at a meal, so you don't need more than that anyway. This is just false. There's no research.
Makes no sense to me.
Makes no sense. It's just false. And you'll see this a lot. Like, people will keep saying this. And I'm like, why are you still saying this? In general, you do want to separate it evenly, but protein is absorbed, like, the absorption is impacted by the other foods that we eat. So if you're eating a protein-rich meal, but you have other foods, it actually slows down the absorption of that protein. So you can take more from a meal with protein than you would an isolated protein from a meal protein shake. So for example, you may want to just drink a protein shake. You could probably absorb 40 to 50 grams, maybe let's just say 40 grams from a protein shake. But if you're going to eat a protein-rich meal, you could eat upwards of 50 to 60 grams of protein and be absolutely fine because there are different things in that meal that are going to slow down the absorption. And so I think there's also, you know, there's a lot that we don't know. I was reading into this and there's actually a lot of different foods initiate muscle protein synthesis. So that muscle protein synthesis is just how we build muscles and tissues, right? So different types of foods actually initiate that at different levels. So, and different kinds of proteins interact differently with our body. So it's not just like your body can only do this and that's it. It's all over the map. So variety is important. Spacing it is important. Getting your protein in the morning is important. I think 50 grams of protein is perfectly acceptable for a meal. Even more than that is totally fine. And of course, I think post-workout protein is really important for women. We want to take our body out of a place of breakdown and take advantage of that enhanced insulin sensitivity that we have right after the workout. We want to get our muscles the raw materials they need to rapidly start building tissues. And this leads to better recovery, more muscle mass, which is your skeletal armor as you age, as we've said here many times. So I would say at least 20 to 30 grams post-workout is within 45 minutes of exercise is really key. And I like to do that. I like to have my breakfast, like my biggest chunk of breakfast right after my workout. Because again, I'm not doing bigger high intensity training. I'm taking my Element and my aminos before my workout because I am working out so early. And then I eat a really hearty breakfast after so that I am getting like plenty of what I need post-workout. Question number two is from Thayan. She says, what's your take on the metabolic eating trend? We've talked a little bit about this before, Steph.
Yeah, we have. Well, we've been talking about this off and on for a long time because when you've been in this field for as long as we have, you've seen it all come and go. The first time I engaged metabolic eating was more than 15 years ago. It's back. I believe that our bodies are made out of the food that we put into them. And I believe that our bodies do really cool stuff and they do it really well when we give them stuff that enables them to do this. And I think this means feeding them important nutrients. And for me, that's health. All right, next. So I actually think that if you really want to dial in to being really, really precise about how you're going to manipulate your food intake to precisely make your body look a certain way or make your metabolism work a certain way, bodybuilders are the people to listen to. they have this whole precise science of how they like titrate up calorie intake and move around their macronutrients so that they can get this like specific musculature and all this kind of stuff. They've been doing it for ages and they're actually pretty good at it. Some of them are quite good at it. And I'm all about like eating as much food as like quantity. If it's good stuff, like go ahead and eat it. I just metabolic eating. I don't know. Like there's just this whole, like, how can I eat as much as how can I get away with eating as much as possible? Is this like underlying attempt, right? Everybody's like, how can I eat as much as possible to like whatever? And for me, it's just, why don't I just focus on eating good foods to a point at which I'm satisfied?
Yeah.
Period. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm saying like, if you want to listen to bodybuilders, go do it, but I'm just not gonna, that's not my priority.
So here's the thing. I think we have the idea of metabolism a little twisted. Metabolism really is, if we want to break it down, it's really your ability to like maintain muscle protein synthesis and insulin sensitivity as you age, because we know Yes. Your metabolism doesn't slow down as you age. Now, does your metabolism downregulate as you stop eating food and diet? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how do you heal it? You eat more food. I can get behind that. I can get behind the idea of more nourishment and more calories, because so many of us spent so many years dieting and restricting. But I'm at a different point in my life right now, and I have come through the path I have come through, and I have healed my metabolism. You know, I don't think it was necessarily broken. I lost my period. I think if you've ever lost your period, you probably you've taken your body to a point where your metabolism has slowed down and said, okay, there's something going on here. We need more body fat or whatever. Okay. Most of the women probably in our age group have gone through fluctuations of this, right? And so you can lose your period. You can slow your metabolism down for various reasons. But I do believe that most people listening have at one point experienced diet culture or like really restricted their calories. If you want to, quote unquote, heal your metabolism, yes, eating more is part of that. Nourishment is part of that. The metabolic eating trend, to me, and Steph and I both saw it, we were like, this is Weston A. Price. This is the Weston A. Price diet. That's what it is. So for me, I just kind of saw it come and I'm going, people have already been talking about this. People have already been doing this. There's nothing. And Ray Pete has been talking about this for ages. So like we've already kind of all taken that in, especially if you started in the paleo movement early on. And then people like Steph and I were trying to change what paleo was defined as, because the original 1.0 paleo was very different than what paleo 2.0 pretty much became. Weston A. Price without the raw milk. I mean, we were talking about eating plenty of carbohydrates. Steph was sitting on the stage at PaleoFX talking about eating tons of carbohydrates, like eating 12 apples, which, you know, she wouldn't do that now. But we were trying to sound the alarm on this whole eating too little carb or it turning into intermittent fasting. And you'll see a lot of people who started out being fans of intermittent fasting, to include Rob Wolf, has come out and said, it's one of the most damaging things I've recommended, especially for women. So there was an evolution of that. And I believe the Weston A. Price Foundation was part of that. I went to Weston A. Price, you know, events, and was heavily involved in Food Freedom Fest and all this kind of stuff. So that's what it is. I think it's trendy because so many women are struggling, and they're struggling to know how to get themselves out of the hole of diet culture, and they want nourishment. And the idea of nourishment is important. And so I think it's great at healing, quote unquote, healing maybe the lack of nourishment you've had for many years and eating more food. But to truly heal your quote unquote heal your, I don't even think that's really a concept. That's not a real thing. We're not like healing our metabolism. Like, we're just supporting it. And the best way to support your metabolism, especially as you age, is to build more muscle, is to lift weights and to eat more protein. This is not to say you should be not eating carbohydrates, not eating nourishing foods, not drinking raw milk if that's what you want to do, or eating carrots with olive oil on them if that's what you want to do. But that in and of itself is not going to take all of your problems away long term. And so I think it can be used as a small intervention, maybe for a time. But I don't think it's going to serve people. I've seen actually, and I'm not going to go into it, but I've seen quite a few people who went hard into the metabolic trend, eating trend, came out the other end and said, wow, I was so stuck in thinking that this is what I kept having to do, that I did it harder and harder. And now I'm on the back end and I don't feel good. Like,
can you explain for me and listeners, like what they were doing? What does it mean to like go really hard into pro-metabolic eating?
Like overeating.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's real funny, but like I think about health right now, not to interrupt, I apologize.
No, go ahead.
I think about health right now as balance, and my whole life. And I think so many of us, like in society and just how we approach our health, it's like, I find a solution and I'm like gunning on it. And then you like, and then you overshoot.
Yes.
Always. And right, so what
we did that
trying to do,
this was us.
Yeah. Is like, take some wisdom and fold it in and seek balance. Yeah. And when I mentioned, you know, bodybuilders and dialing in your body and stuff, what I'm kind of referring to is this sub layer of like, well, I'm going to eat a lot right now so I can have a fast metabolism later. Quote unquote, like people seek a fast metabolism for fat burning. Like, what is the goal here?
Yeah. Right.
You know? And yeah, I'm a really big fan of balance, because if I undereat at my meals, then I'm undereating. But also if I overeat, like my blood sugar, right? And so, and no meal, there's never like a perfect amount of food to eat in a meal. My point is that like, I'm out here humaning and ping-ponging between extremes, but trying to make the extremes a little bit less extreme.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that's smart. And when I think of like having a healthy metabolism, I think of the opposite of metabolic derangement. Most people are going through metabolic derangement, and it's going to naturally happen as you get older. We get less insulin sensitive. So how can we set ourselves up for success? And really, it comes down to protein intake, muscle, And of course, all the things we talk about for health, sleep, like what are all the things that we do that improve insulin sensitivity? There are so many things and so much data we have, you know, muscle mass, sleep, reducing stress, sunlight, like lowering blue light exposure, like all of those things facilitate a healthy metabolism. You know, we think about it just in terms of like, what's our weight doing? And that's just not it. It's not about weight loss. With my birthday money, the only thing that I really wanted to get was more Blissy Mulberry Silk hair ties. I kid you not. I got them in this gorgeous green matcha color plus like a very neutral tan color. They look cute on your wrist, but they're also awesome for your hair. I wear them when I work out. And for the first time ever, I got my first silk bonnet to wear at night. And now I wear it every night. It protects my hair. My hair is soft and shiny when I wake up in the morning, and I absolutely love it. And I finally made the switch because when I switched to a 100% mulberry silk pillowcase from Blissy, it made such a huge difference both in my face, my skin, and my hair. And that's because cotton actually absorbs moisture. It absorbs your skincare and it can dry out your skin and your hair. And once I made the shift, I noticed a significant change in how my hair and my skin felt in the morning. Silk actually reduces frizz, tangles, and prevents breakages because it keeps the moisture in your hair. And best of all, it's temperature regulating and always cool. If you hate being hot at night, you will love Blissy Silk pillowcases and accessories. Blissy is 100% mulberry silk. They have silk pillowcases. They have other accessories. They are naturally hypoallergenic cooling. And unlike other pillowcases, Blissy's are actually machine washable. Everybody I know loves them. They have a ton of different prints and colors, and they make great gifts because there's an option for literally anyone. Men love them too. They have over 1 million raving fans, and you could be next. Try now risk-free for 60 nights at blissy.com/wellfed. Get an additional 30% off with code WELLFED. Again, that's Blissy, BLISSY.com/WELLFED. And use coupon code WELLFED to get an additional 30% off. Your skin and hair will thank you. Okay. Question number three is from Emily Marie 17. She says, I'm currently under a lot of stress. I'm 50 years old and cannot sleep. What supplements should I be taking?
Well, that's an interesting second question or second sentence. What supplements should I be taking? There are some things. I mean, I'm going to put magnesium up on that list. Magnesium has been helpful for me recently, but that's because I stopped taking it, which I think I announced to y'all. I stopped taking everything and then I added it back in and lo and behold, I'm sleeping better. things are a little bit better. So, but I also like kind of overshot a little bit. And so it's balance is the quest for me. And another thing, I'll go ahead and share with you another thing I'm taking. It's a Lactobacillus rhamnosus. It's a probiotic. You know, nowadays you get a probiotic, there's like 100 different kinds of things in it. It's optimized for X, Y, and Z thing. I just wanted this one bug, which has been associated in studies with helping the body produce more GABA, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. Now, I have personally tried supplementing with like straight up GABA. That did not work for me. And there are other things that people sometimes take to try to help with GABA production. And actually magnesium does, but I've been taking this and I think it might be helping. I feel a little bit more chill in that, like, I'm not going to obsess over things kind of way. So I'm just like, I'm sharing that because that's what I'm doing. I'm not necessarily saying supplements are good or bad, or this is the solution to poor sleep. Another thing. So, you know, around 50, a lot of women, it's, you know, you're talking about going through stress and a lot of women are going through hormonal changes that do disrupt sleep and it's hard. And it's typically often generalized and I think it's okay to speak in generalities here because estrogen levels are falling off and estrogen does play a role in sleep. Something you can try doing is eating some slightly estrogenic foods. Put a little bit of soy in your diet. You know, I don't always recommend that. You might want to experiment with it and just see if it helps. And then a lot of people like get on supplements for that, like estrogen therapy. So this is a gentler way to experiment and see if that's like an underlying cause and if it could help you for the short term. And then you can keep looking at different kinds of solutions in the long term. Obviously we like reducing stress. I love reducing stress. A lot easier said than done. So if you caffeinate, make sure to keep it in the morning. You could try removing caffeine altogether. Although I personally find that when I drink caffeine in the morning, it helps me It's a support to my circadian rhythm of being up in the morning and coming down at night, whatever. We're all different. Exercise in the morning, carbohydrates maybe could help you fall asleep at night. So those are just some like quick general things. You know, we like orange light at night. We like getting rid of blue light on devices. I say we. Tell people like, you know, talk about their people they're married to. And I'm like, no, Noelle and I like blue light.
Yeah. I'm actually going to lump this in with the next question, which is question number four, which is Doc said symptoms are stress related, but how do you avoid stress as a mom of an 8-month-old? My answer to this is you don't. I think we have to learn how to manage stress and manage our internal dialogue and cope with the stress that's happening around us and learn how to say no and to ask for help and to hold your boundaries, because this is the common theme that we keep getting, which is I'm stressed, but I can't do anything about it. I'm having all these symptoms. So what do I do? And there are things all the time that you are not going to be able to remove the stress from your life. We have to live with our stressors. And so I think that we need to become better able to manage our internal dialogue and have better coping techniques, have better an ability to remove the noise that is making us feel like maybe we aren't good enough or that everybody else has it easy and we don't. We need to learn how to cope with unmet expectations. We need to learn how to cope with when things don't go our way. How do we change and make the best of it and turn it into a positive and or carry on? How do we do that? And that's a much deeper and harder discussion, right? And that takes doing work that none of us want to do. Sometimes it might mean getting into therapy. Sometimes it might mean sitting with your discomfort and figuring out what I have been doing isn't working to manage this stress. So I need to change something. I need to do something differently. I don't know what that is for you at 50 years old. And I don't know what that is for you with an 8-month-old, but I do know that this is a season and there will be other stressful seasons. And so this is a great opportunity to learn, how does my body physiologically respond to stress? And how can I make sure that I'm proactive in supporting my body as it has those physiological changes? So for me, when I'm stressed, my sleep does tend to go away. And that tends to be because of a little bit of anxiety or my mind runs. And so I have a plan in place to support my body and to support my sleep. I love a good stress supplement. And I have been taking it daily lately because we are in a very busy season. So it's ashwagandha, holy basil, and rhodiola. It's just a small micro dose that I take in the mornings. It's daily support. I am working on that for one of my next supplements, but I do that every morning to support my sleep. And then I take my magnesium and L-theanine at night. Sometimes I still take CBD oil when I'm traveling or when I know that my mind is still running and I need to calm down. I'll take CBD oil right before I go to bed. So I have to protect my sleep. I wear the blue blockers. I do all the things. But I also do things on a daily basis to make sure that I'm in a nourished state so that when stressors come, I can handle it. So I'm eating sufficient protein. I'm supporting my body with animal, you know, nutrients, animal products, eggs, beef, chicken, things that support my liver detoxification so that my hormones are balanced. And that's not creating more issues. I don't drink hardly any alcohol anymore. I'm not bringing in caffeine anymore, maybe once or twice a month. But I don't need that artificial freeing up of stored cortisol at rest. Like, I really enjoy having balanced cortisol levels. So how can I do all the little things on a daily basis to make sure that I'm in a nourished and balanced state? Because I have to handle a high amount of stress on a daily basis. That's just what moms have to do. You know, we have to be more intentional. So I think you have to figure out the stress is happening. What's happening on a physiological level in my body? Like, how does my body respond to the stress? Is it hormone imbalances? Do my autoimmune symptoms flare and all that kind of stuff? And then support your body so that you can healthfully balance hormones. You know, if you're 50 and you can't sleep, that's probably a perimenopause symptom. So how can we naturally support perimenopause symptoms? And I have quite a few podcast episodes on that with quite a few different people. That's where I would start first for you. But, you know, the way that I would manage hormones at 35 with a baby is going to be the same way that I manage hormones and stress at 50 in perimenopause. And I'm excited to be on this journey with everybody, but it is a lot. And unfortunately, there is no easy answer. And supplements absolutely do help. And supplements are absolutely our way that I support my body and support my stress. But it is on top of all of the little things that I do throughout the day to make sure that my body can handle, is in a nourished state and can handle the stress that I have to experience that I can't remove. So.
Yep. And that's like, I mean, that's just, that's the work of being human, right? You experience things and you cultivate resilience. And something that I think about a whole lot is that life never gets easier. It really doesn't. You get stronger. Yeah. No, it really doesn't. Like maybe you have children, maybe you don't, you have aging parents, you're aging, you're dealing with different sources of wear and tear on your physical body, on your emotional self. And then like people in your life start dying. And that's just like, life does not get easier. Every stage is preparation for the next stage. And so the trick isn't like, just, you know, the trick is stepping into that and saying like, okay, like, how am I going to nourish myself physically and emotionally and just like step up? And of course, also that means getting things off your plate that aren't a priority, right? Priorities are always a question. What is the priority? What am I giving my heart and my strength and my body to, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, then you keep going.
Yeah. And setting boundaries and not playing into toxic relationships or toxic people. Like I know a lot of women are people pleasers, but if something's not working for you and it's causing you more stress than not, like set healthy boundaries.
People pleasing is ultimately, you think it's for them, but it's for you because fear of conflict and wanting to be liked by this person. I mean, I'm not going to like radically overgeneralize, but like those things are deeply intertwined for most people who people please. Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like a way of being in the world that many women have learned, that I have deeply learned. And it is my work to get out of it. And I find that the more I get out of it, the more I help empower the people around me to also get out of it, which is very important. And also on the topic of boundaries, I think so much about how like the hardest boundaries we set are the ones in ourselves, right? Like you can tell other people like, don't talk to me or whatever, but like, Steph, don't look at the news, right? Steph, don't do this. Steph, don't keep falling into these habits that you normally fall into. Don't people please, right? We often think about like needing to stop the world from being a certain way. But like Noelle is saying, like the world doesn't stop being stressful. And so a lot of this boundarying, I like to think of boundarying as something in myself, like don't text that person. You know, mm-hmm. The problem isn't them. The problem is that I'm going to text them, which I may or may not have done this morning, you know, and it's just, whatever. We're all on the way.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. We're all on the way. Steph, you say that all the time. And I love it. It's so true. I appreciate your honesty. So Thank you.
I have a question before we go and we can, I don't know, you can like fade us out while I ask this question. What do you think of this middle part?
Oh, hold on.
Cause now my hair is like, it's a bob.
It is a bob. I like it. Yeah. I really like it.
Yeah. It needs to come in a little bit here, but I think it's better than the side.
So with shorter hair and with curly hair, I feel like you guys are really, you can vary. I think, especially with really curly hair, like I think a side part looks really good, but you could do either. So you would have to take a round.
But brush. I have to cut this. Cause this is my like.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So this is my normal. It's good. But also I side parted it at work the other day and my colleagues were like, oh, that's good.
Really? See, I think you could still, so as you tuck your hair behind your ear, you have that one. I mean, my hair is all different lengths, so it is what it is. But if you took a round brush, so if you put a little bit of root lifter, InnerSense makes one, and then you can to a round brush, then you would have that a little bit of a lift right at the front, and it would look really good. And honestly, go look at people with pictures of shorter hair who have middle parts and it'll improve your confidence. Because for me, and then once you start seeing people with side parts who are in their 40s or whatever, and you're it's aging you. Yeah. I really think once you settle it, You're going to love it. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think about what would work for dancing because anyway,
team middle part over here, just working my way, changing the world one step at a time from a person who was so set on her side part. Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
I've been there, guys. I know how you feel. Anything else from you?
Nope.
For more from Stephanie, go to
the X.
Hey, and let's take a picture of you with a side part and a middle part, and we'll post in our stories, and we'll see which one. We'll get people to vote. Let's just do that. Let's do a vote. Community vote. For more from me, go to follow us on Well Fed Women. We'll do a community vote the week this comes out. For more from me at coconutsandkettlebells.com. Thanks for being here, guys. We will talk to you next week.